Homer Radio with Julie Patterson on Freedom 95.
Hope you're having a great afternoon. We really, really do. We're so glad that you're listening to Boomer Radio today. And I have a confession to make. You ready for this one? So I had a guest that was not available for this segment. So Julie's going to talk. I hope your eyes don't glaze over. But I think it's going to be a fun segment because I'm going to talk about my trip to New York recently where I went up to run the marathon. And you know I could talk about running for hours. So please, no, don't push the button yet. I got some good stories about how some of the people that told me things about the New York City Marathon, they're all lies. That's one tease. The hardest part about the New York City Marathon is not the 26.2 miles that you run. It is not. I'll tell you what is. I'm going to talk about a little bit about the training and what led up to that race. Because guess what? You don't just go to the race and run 26.2 miles. You need to train. And my training started about 16 weeks out. So we'll talk about that. And let's see what else. Just planning to do a race long distance. If you've ever like planned just a vacation or a trip, you know what goes into that. Well, add on top of that, you really have to care about what you eat. You really have to care about, you know, getting enough sleep, staying off your feet, all kinds of stuff. Oh, and I lost my wallet in New York City too. So yeah, I did. So I'll tell you what happened there. I'm getting a phone call. I'm going to decline it. Okay. So first of all, started training for the New York City Marathon, which happened November the 4th, 16 weeks out, because that's what you're supposed to do. I know that because I'm an RRCA certified coach, Roadrunners Club of America coach. And if you train for a half marathon, which a lot of you guys do in the springtime for the mini, at least 12 weeks out. Now, the reason you take that much time is because you have to slowly build up. As I said, you don't just go out there and run 10 miles, do you? No, that's kind of hard. You run around the block first, and then you run twice around the block, and then you run three times around the block. Then you're actually up to a mile. And you know what? I'm all about walking, too. If you're a walker and that's your thing, do it, because I like to walk, too. The reason I like to run more is because you get done quicker. You get done a whole lot faster if you run than if you walk, but all about either one. So training for a long distance race does require time. So that's number one thing you need to learn about that. I also like to tell the women that I coach in my group, the Circle City Go Girls, that they should have buy-in from their spouse or their partner. Because guess what? If you have your training class on Monday nights at 6 o'clock downtown, and your spouse or your partner's like, you're going there again? Instead of, you know, let's go out to eat instead. That's not buy-in. That's not support. You need somebody that's supportive. So you need to try to make that person understand that, hey, this is a big deal to me. So, you know, I need your support. So that's called buy-in. So, all right, we're talking about training. You got to have a plan. Now, you don't just decide, okay, this week I'm going to do this many miles, and that makes sense. No, you don't just decide, okay, I'm going to do 10 miles this week, 4 miles next week. No, it doesn't work like that. What I teach people who do a long-distance event is the 10% rule. Now, the 10% rule basically is, okay, start with, we're going to go walk for 15 minutes, okay? Most people can do that. You don't have to go fast. And then guess what? The next week we will add 10% on top of that. So we'll add maybe 5 more minutes. Some people like to do it by time. I like to do it by miles. How do you know how many miles you're going? Well, I would just like go out and run and then get in the car and see how far that is. I can see your eyes glazing over. Let's talk about some fun New York stories. You ready? Okay. So training is a very important component of getting to the start line of an event. So training is very, very important. On October the 19th, how do I remember this as I'm training for the New York City Marathon? I took a terrible, terrible, terrible fall. It was a fall so bad that I couldn't get up. So I'm running outside of Fort Benjamin Harrison, trying to do a 20-mile run, right? Because you have to do those kinds of things while you're training. And I'm up in a residential area, and a car's coming my way, and there's some cars parked on the side of the street. Guess what? I'm going to hop up on the sidewalk for safety, right? I hit a lip and went down. And I'm telling you what, I still have some scabs from that fall. It was terrible. My knees, my shoulder, my hands. I looked like a crime scene victim. I was bloody and bleeding. It was so bad that that guy that was driving the car stopped his car. He got out of the car and he's like, are you okay? I said, no, I'm not okay. I couldn't even move. So the guy comes over. He goes, can I take you somewhere? I said, well,
I can't even get up. So I said, can you please help me get up? So the guy like comes over and I'm trying to teach him. I don't want him putting his arms under my shoulders. That's a little too much for me. So I'm trying to teach him like, okay, grab me by the thumb and the hand here, grab me by the thumb and the hand here and lift me up. That's how I help people get up. I can't show you, you can't see me, but anyway. So he gets me up. And then he's like, are you sure you don't want me to take you somewhere? I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good. Well, guess what? I wasn't fine at all. I was a mile and a half from my car. And I started hitchhiking. I was delirious and in shock, right? So that was the worst thing that happened in training. I fell. All right. So I finally make the plans, get to New York. Some of the things that they tell you about the New York City Marathon are lies. I'm just here to say. We'll get to that in a moment. But the hardest part about going and doing the New York City Marathon is not the 26.2 miles, as I told you. It's trying to get to the start line. Oh my goodness. Here's my story. So you pick transportation when you sign up for the race and you get in. I picked a bus at Central Library. It was about a mile from my hotel. I could walk that marathon morning. No big deal. So I get there at 7 a.m. That was my bus time. Hop on a bus with about 60 other people going to the race. And it's supposed to take an hour and a half. An hour and a half into our ride, some lady is screaming at our bus driver, and we're all thinking, that's inappropriate. Why is she being so rude? This poor guy's just trying to get us to the race. Well, come to find out the guy took a wrong turn, and we're not going to get to the start line. She's screaming at him because they're closing the Brooklyn Bridge, which was our route to get to the start line village and then to the start line on the Verrazano Bridge, right, in Staten Island. Okay, so are we going to make it or not? Believe it or not, I was very, very calm throughout that because I knew I didn't want to waste my energy. And if I didn't get there, I didn't get there. If I got there, great. I really do want to run the race. I've trained for it, but we may not get there, right? So there's a gentleman who's done the race before who was up at the front of the bus, and he's like, I'm going to call this emergency number that's on their website. So he calls the emergency number. They tell this guy, and the guy tells the bus driver, hey, you have to get him to the Staten Island Ferry by 8:45. That's the last ferry that goes over to Staten Island, and that's the only way you can get to the start line. So people on the bus are like chattering, of course, like, you know, losing their minds. I'm not going to get to the race. And of course, the one hysterical woman was obnoxious, let's just say, because you don't really have to be that rude when somebody makes a mistake. That's just my opinion. So finally, he's racing. There's a police, you know, guy that tries to find us and help us get to the Staten Island Ferry, right? So we get there at guess what time? 8:40. The last ferry leaves at 8:45. You know what? I was just happy to be there. I didn't care. So we're all kind of, you know, we got a marathon, but we're going to run so we can get onto the ferry, which we did. And then it was like the coolest thing in the world. We're on the Staten Island Ferry, and it's so solemn. You like are going, it took about, you know, half an hour trip, but there's like the Statue of Liberty. I took a picture. There's like, you know, the New World Trade Center Tower. I mean, took a picture. You're like looking at all this from the view of the ferry through the water. It was beautiful. It really was so reverent and so cool. So anyway, we get to Staten Island, and then guess what? You get off the ferry, and there's hundreds of runners trying to get on all these buses to get up to the Verrazano Bridge, which is still another 20-30 minute bus ride, right? By the time you know, all is said and done. So there's, I'm looking, it took us probably 40 minutes to get through this queue.
We'll have more Boomer Radio right after this. Boomer Radio with Julie Patterson on Freedom 95.
So I'm going to introduce you now to my Liam Neeson. He wasn't really Liam Neeson, but this guy, he was from Australia. We all know that Liam is from England. But he kind of looked like him. And I heard him talking, and he said, hey, I did this race 2 years ago. So, of course, me, I latched onto that and said, hey, can I follow you, please? And he's like, oh, sure, with his, like, Australian accent. So I followed that guy. And we're in the queue waiting, you know, another half hour. We finally get to where the buses are. And, of course, they usher you. You know, there's 20, 30 buses, and they're ushering, hey, you, come on down this way. You go that way. So Liam sees a bus that has a door open kind of in the middle, and he says to the bus driver, hey, do you have any seats? The guy's like, no, but you can come on and stand. good enough for Liam. It's good enough for me. So he said, come on. So we get on the bus and we're standing. I don't care if I'm standing. At least I'm on a bus. Maybe I'll get to the start line to start this race. Well, they have waves. My wave was at 10:40. Guess what? It's already 10:30. And I know I've got a 20, 30 minute bus ride to get to the start line. The last wave left at 11. That was my best hope. Am I going to get there by 11 to start this race or not? Well, I hope so. So we're on the bus, Liam and me and, you know, 60 of our closest friends. And we finally, after about another half hour, get up to the village. Well, you know, all of us on this bus who went to the ferry and expected to be hanging out at this village for at least an hour or more, were kind of, I wouldn't say panicked, but, you know, poor Liam, he didn't eat breakfast because there's an area at the village where they have bagels and coffee and juice and, you know, protein bars and all this stuff. So he hadn't even eaten. There was a girl on the ferry that gave him an extra banana, so at least he had some kind of fuel. I was smart and I had a bunch of snacks, not shareable snacks, but I had sort of eaten. I had my one banana left. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So we get, the bus finally gets us to the village area. And, you know, we all have to pee because we're hydrated. That was sad because we didn't have time to do any of the things that you're supposed to do at the beginning of a marathon. We're just trying to get to the start line. So there are three different colors. I was in the green wave. There's an orange wave. There's a blue wave. So I'm racing to get to the green start line. You know, as I get off the bus, mind you, I hear the cannons go off because they just shoot these cannons. It's the coolest thing in the world. And my wave is taken off. Well, guess what? Julie isn't going to be starting in her wave. I'm about a four and a half hour marathon person, depending on the day. So I tell you that because by the time I got to the bridge, I see the guy holding the 6 hour pace sign. What that means is Julie's with all the slow people. That's okay if 6 hours is what it takes for you to get through a marathon. I totally get it. I've done one about that time, one time when I was injured. It was terrible. So I'm trying to wiggle my way through. You know, this is thousands of people. It's the largest marathon in the world. 55,000 people begin that event, okay? So I'm trying to wiggle my way down, you know, saying, hey, you know, I'm in the 1040 wave. I'm in the 1040 wave. All of a sudden, there's some people in front of me. They're like, yeah, we're in the 1040 wave too. And I'm like, oh crap, you missed it too. And they're like, yeah, we didn't get there either. So here's all of us like, you know, kind of dejected, kind of sad, but just resigned. Hey, I'm here. I at least get to start the race. So I'm kind of resigned by all of it. And I'm going to be back with, you know, the 6 hour people, but that's okay. I'm here. So from that point on, it was just like, you know what? I've eaten properly. I've trained properly. I should be good to go. Now, before I get to the start line, I want to tell you about losing my wallet. So you're supposed to take it easy the day before the race, right? So taking it easy for me is to stay off my feet. We went to a movie. My husband went on the trip with me. So we went to go see Bohemian Rhapsody. What a movie. Phenomenal. So Julie's at the concession stand buying her $5 little water. Yeah, $5 for a water there. And I left my wallet. I wasn't thinking. But I didn't even know I had lost my wallet till after the race. It's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or this is the day before the race. It was late in the day, and I'm like looking for it for some reason, and it's not there. And you know, in your head, if you've ever lost your wallet, you're like, okay, I'm not going to panic. I'm going to retrace my steps. I'm going to try to find it. And I said to my husband, it's like, I think I left it at the movie theater. That's the best possible solution, honestly, because if somebody took it out of my purse, I'm done. Has, you know, it has my Visa, my Target card, my Nordstrom card, my debit card, all the good stuff, my Kohl's card, all the good stuff in there, my license. So it would have been really, really bad to have lost that. It's always sucks to lose your wallet. But anyway, so I called over there and miraculously they're like, yep, we have it. It's in our lockbox. I'm like, oh, thank you, Jesus. So he went to get it for me because I was trying to stay off my feet. So that was a nice thing to do. Thank you, Pat. So I'm back at the start line, right? Back at the start line. Hardest part about the race, not the 26.2 miles because I was trained and ready. It was getting to the start line. But here we go. So we got about, you know, a 15-minute wait till the 11 o'clock, right? Or 10 minutes, whatever it was. It wasn't very long. And they sang the national anthem, which is always so cool. And then the cannons go off. It's the only race that I know of in the world that has actual cannons. blast off and start the race. So we slowly work our way up to the start line. And that's where I encountered my first lie of the event, the first lie of the race. People who have done this race before tell me, oh, that Verrazano Bridge in Staten Island, man, you know, especially if you're on the bottom, which I was. So there's two layers to the bridge, the blue and the orange wave people are on top. The green wave is on the bottom. I was told by multiple people, you're going to get peed on. They pee off the bridge. They're hydrated. There's nowhere to go. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, disgusting, right? So, you know, I had this extra layer on just in case, you know, like I could hold it above me like an umbrella and not worry about it. Well, it was a lie. Nobody was doing any of that nonsense. None of that happened. But people did have layers and layers of clothes on. And that really does happen at races. So they'll start taking the layers off because they know they're going to get warmed up soon. And you don't want to be rude and just like toss it in the middle, you know, of the road when you're running. So people are pretty polite about it and they put it to the side. And what happens is people come in and they sweep that area and they take all of those clothes to a Goodwill or Salvation Army or some wonderful cause. So there was lots of clothes everywhere. Did I want to kind of pick through and get some good stuff? No, I never really did. But I took an old, as I told Jeremy, our producer here, I took an old radio station fleece from a former radio station and tossed it. So it's gone. Somebody in New York City is wearing that fleece with a logo from a local radio station that shall not be named. But anyway, so that's kind of a cool thing that happens, that charity angle. And of course, there's a lot of charity runners in this too. So anyway, so here's the next phenomenal part that happened in the race. And then I'll tell you about one more lie. So Julie starts the race in the middle of the Verrazano Bridge. And it's huge. I mean, if you think about, I'm trying to think of what to compare it to, a bridge around here. We don't really have any bridges that I can think of that compare. If you've ever been to Louisville, I mean, think about that bridge and how vast it is, both sides. Well, both sides are open for the race, right? So the huge amount of people that are trying to go up in the queue to get to the start line are kind of spreading out now, right? So that was good. So I start taking off and, you know, I'm trying to find my pace. The very first mile is straight uphill, second mile straight downhill. And every bridge we got to, there were five bridges and five boroughs is how you run this race. Every bridge was a hill or an incline. And this event was very hilly. That's why I was running out at Fort Harrison, because there's a lot of hills out there. So the first mile straight up, but guess what? It's the first mile. So you don't feel it too bad. It really wasn't so terrible. So that wasn't, you know, and they tell you to kind of pace yourself. So I did. It was cool. So we do the first 3 miles. There's no bathroom till mile three, mind you. And so when Julie passes mile three, Julie looks and sees the line. Guess what? I don't want to lose 10, 15 minutes standing in line to go pee. So guess what? I'm going to hold it. I'm going to keep going. So mind you, this is hours, you know, so whatever. So we get to mile eight. At mile eight is when all of the people from all of the waves kind of come together. Yes, we're running the same route, but there's like a barrier in between. So say, you know, traffic is going northbound and southbound. We're all running the same direction, but there's that barrier in between, like a divided highway, right? Mile eight is where we all came together. And it was kind of cool, to be honest with you. So the first few miles, Julie has this realization. I'm like, oh, I started with the 6 hour pace people. And I'm passing people. I'm passing everybody. So the whole race, I passed people, which is a phenomenal feeling. And that never happens. So it was really a blessing in disguise, this whole deal about starting in the back, getting there late. It was the most difficult part of the race, getting to that finish line. And then, you know, I had a great race. I had fueled properly. I had rested properly. I had trained properly. And I get to the end and I got my medal. It was so cool. And then celebrated, of course. So that may have been too much information. I am going to leave you now. I talk a lot. I hope you enjoyed my little tale of the New York City Marathon. And I will have pictures of my medal on my Facebook page. So you take it easy. This is Boomer Radio, and I'm Julie Patterson on Freedom 95.
And now, Dick Wolfsey with Life in a Nutshell.
It's time for Life in a Nutshell with Dick Wolfsey.
My mother, rest her soul,
drove her 1987 Chevrolet until almost 90, and sometimes faster. She was in great health at 87, but it irked her that many of her friends had handicap license plates that allowed them to park closer to the grocery store. She'd get out of her car and drag her foot along the ground to appear disabled. The A&P manager overlooked it. He wasn't as lenient on the shoplifting charges, though. In memory of Mom, I'm going to admit to something that will probably generate a lot of mail filling my inbox. Two or three times at the supermarket over the last 10 years, when I've been in a huge rush, I parked in the space that said, "Parking for Mothers with Toddlers." Now, I don't have a toddler, but I did have one 25 years ago. They didn't have those reserved parking spaces back then, and I'm kind of feeling cheated, like my mother did. Oh, and by the way, the sign is sexist. I mean, men can obviously have toddlers, although they probably left them home with Mom. Which brings me to the next sign. Parking for expectant moms. Now, just once I pulled into the space for 3 minutes while I grabbed a dozen eggs. Big mistake. Someone recognized me from TV and pointed out to me that I was not pregnant. Now, I don't plan on ever doing this again, but just in case of a real emergency, so I don't get busted, I do carry a down pillow in the back seat. And then there's this sign. Parking for online customers only. Hey, what's the deal here? These folks were too lazy to shop at the actual store, and then they were too impatient to have it delivered. And now they want their own parking space? I don't think so. Now, to be fair, if you are pregnant and also dragging along two toddlers to pick up a car seat you ordered on the internet, you should be allowed to park right inside the store. Here's one that annoys me. Parking for takeout customers only. Just because you ordered takeout doesn't mean that you should get a space right in front of the restaurant. You are too tired to cook at home, and you're also too cheap to tip the waitress. So why do you think you should have a special place to park? I mean, if you want to feed your face quickly, there's a McDonald's drive-thru right across the street from that Applebee's. Now, if it were up to me, I'd have the following signs created. Reserve parking for men who need beer. You know, some guys need beer, they should have their own space, and a checkout lane that says 44 beers or less. Here's another. Reserve parking for men who forgot the one thing they came in for. I mean, this is for the guy who needed a box of nails and came home with a Weber grill and 200 pounds of mulch. But he forgot the nails. Reserve parking for fathers who came back for their children. Research shows that many of these fathers go home without the kids only to realize the children are missing when there are empty seats at dinner. And finally, a sign that says, Dick Wolfsey only. I know this makes me sound self-centered and selfish, but here's how I'm different from online purchasers, takeout customers, and pregnant mothers with toddlers. If you get to the parking lot and I'm not using my space, it's all yours.
Life in a Nutshell is presented by Dick Wolfsey. He can be seen weekends on Wish TV and is an author and humorist with columns in 40 newspapers in central Indiana and around the country. Email Dick at wolfsey@aol.com or visit him on Facebook.